This week, Bitcoin added $1,000 while silver and gold held firm above support. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczyk, with another Muy Grande-sized show that might be the most important in years. More about that in a minute. But first, India celebrating Holi, festival of color, marking the spring of each year. It's an ancient festival, first mentioned all the way back to the 4th century, and it's not uncommon to give gold and silver gifts. It certainly seemed to help the markets this week shake off a small dollar rally. And investors may just have something to celebrate thanks to Thomas Gocklin, the founder of Kinesis, as well as Andrew McGuire, the well-known precious metals whistleblower, in a conference call. This is an epic exclusive. We're honored to be their key sounding board. Their gold and silver crypto concept is poised to disrupt the entire gold suppression scheme, Kinesis. It's a unique gold-backed cryptocurrency arrangement. Kinesis unites the monetary world in a single, simple-to-adopt currency with gold safety, blockchain decentralization, anonymity, and up to 8% yields. Three different ways to earn a yield. Andrew McGuire notes that there's zero paper money involved. It's purely digitally based and LBMA approved. We have the Kinesis Blueprint version 15 ready for you this weekend. Of course, I'd be remiss not to mention a disclaimer. Crowd sales are speculative. They're risky in nature. Due diligence is highly encouraged. We like for folks to sit down with a registered financial advisor first, and most of our colleagues only put a fraction of a few percent into any one crowd sale. And then Leo Organz of Wealth Research Group makes his show debut. He shares his insights on Bitcoin, altcoins, and precious metals. The former very successful money manager and entrepreneur is an avid silver aficionado, and he also survived the dot-com crash. How many of us in this audience can relate to those two events? The ordeal taught him to invest like Warren Buffett, to hold forever, and he's holding silver commodities in China stocks with big results. He likes First Majestic Silver's CEO Keith Neumeyer, who's calling for 100-plus silver, and Amir Adnani. He shares some of his favorite gold and silver stock picks, and he, like us, is looking for a 5 to 10-fold increase in the cryptocurrency market cap. That would put Bitcoin well over 100,000. You help us keep this show on the air and keep the wheels running by subscribing to the Alpha Stocks newsletter. I have a weekly portfolio with stocks and all of my favorite crypto candidates, Bitcoin and altcoins, all the latest information, crowd sales. The portfolio is very scientifically based, 5 to 10 candidates every week for almost 8 years now. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. And I'd like to encourage you all to call into our Q&A hotline. Please jot this number down on a Post-it pad or plug it right into your phone, 641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. You'll want to write this down, 641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. You can call 24-7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can delete, re-record as many times as you like. Maybe you'd like to make some comments. Maybe you have some questions. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Mostly sunny skies appeared over the precious metals sector this week. Gold relinquished just $7 at ending at $1,323, while silver finished near break-even at $1,647. Both are holding support well, along with the XAU, which gave back just two, ending at $78.75. Black gold, West Texas, gave back just $2, ending at $61.25 per barrel. The current consolidation still suggests much higher prices later in the year. And the Bitcoin ETF added 5%, finishing at $18 even after the big split. The top story moving the gold sector. The precious metals rebounded sharply on Friday as investors weighed in the likelihood of a U.S.-led global trade war, offsetting some of the hawkish Fed comments. On Thursday, the U.S. POTUS announced new tariffs on imports of aluminum and steel, which promptly increased concerns that competing nations could implement retaliatory policies. The news capped the U.S. dollar rally, turning investors instead to the king of currencies, the precious metals, safe haven, and the cryptos. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, the technical position remains favorable as gold tested support and held firm as the dollar rally faded. The current short-term trading ranges suggest high odds of an assault on 1,400 in the short term and in the midterm 1,500. And in the crypto world, Bitcoin is continuing within a very broad trading range between around 9,000 and 12,000 or higher. Moving on to the Wall Street report, partly cloudy skies rolled in over the New York Stock Exchange as U.S. stocks were unnerved by less than favorable comments from the new Fed head. At Friday's close, the Dow was off just 771, about 3%, ending at 24,538. The S&P 500 gave back 56 points, about 2%, closing at 2691, while the NASDAQ dropped 80, 1%, finishing at a remarkable 7257. The big story moving the sector, comments from the newly appointed Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell on his first day of congressional testimony on Tuesday indicated an increased hawkish stance on U.S. monetary policy, hinting at 4 quarter-point rate hikes this year beginning next month. Now, clearly, the Federal Reserve is trying to telegraph and maybe even convince the markets of its dubious intentions to normalize monetary policy, removing the free lunch from the exchange floor. In other words, the Fed put could be off the table, which increases volatility. However, the hawkish Fed speak gave a temporary boost to the dollar, but that faded quickly as the reality of 4 rate hikes came into focus. Case in point, the current Fed funds futures indicate 83% odds of a rate hike this month, so that's a done deal. Better than even odds of a quarter point hike in June, and a little better than typical in December. So best case, I see 3 rate hikes and probably only 2 this year, substantially lower. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, given that the Fed's meeting is slated in a couple of weeks, and the 7-indicator greed to fear index from USA Today is now at the most extremely fearful point in years, I suggest that we could see a bottom in the next few days to weeks. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. It's a pleasure to welcome back Andrew McGuire and the CEO of an alternative global marketplace, the ABX Exchange. This is Thomas Coughlin. Part 2, the Kinesis ICO. This is a crowdfunding opportunity that we've been looking into. Very excited and lots of institutional interest. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you back. Who would like to start off today, Andrew McGuire or Thomas?
I'll let Thomas go ahead, and then if I can fill anything in, I'll certainly do that.
Great. Fire at will.
Thanks for having us back, Chris. As I was mentioning last time on the show, what the ABX team has developed is something really quite unique and special. It's an entirely new monetary system, and it's a monetary system that's based on movement and utilization of money, effectively. So we focused in on what makes a currency successful. And ultimately what makes a currency successful is it being an effective store of value, an efficient medium of exchange. And we're focused on doing those things to the very best capabilities we can. So if you look at store of value, there's no better store of value than gold. Throughout the millennia, it's been the greatest store of value. Until recently, it hasn't been an effective medium of exchange. It's quite difficult to use as a currency, really, in this modern society, until cryptocurrencies have come about, whereby we can transact in digital currency. And of course, we can use our mobile devices to do so, or also debit cards, where we've gone with banking and payments, which also help facilitate this for cryptocurrencies. So we think with the partnership deals that we've put together, and one of them's with a very large mobile bank, with a, cryptocurrency wallet connected to a debit card. You can do payments and banking, international transfers, remittances, etc., all through this wallet, and then onboard and offboard, fiat currency in 250 countries around the world as domestic transfers. I mean, our efficiency and cost effectiveness basically through online banking facilities is second to none, really. We provide a solution that's much more cost-effective and efficient than certainly any bank I know. We've tied that all into our Kinesis currency suite. Now, we've taken another step further in actually attaching a very significant yield system. It's a multifaceted yield system to the Kinesis currency suite. I say suite because we'll be offering various different cryptocurrencies. The primary ones are based around gold and silver, and we also are attaching other assets to this as well, including physically stored banknotes as well. So we're looking to suck capital in from all over the world. So our multifaceted yield system, we've got four different yields. The most interesting I find, and it's I call it an active yield, although there's only sort of one leg that's active to it. And this is for anyone, really, whether you're a private individual or whether you're a large trading organization, you can benefit significantly from this yield. It's basically people who either bring their bullion into our system or purchase bullion in our wholesale system. They bring these coins to life, so bring this currency to life. It's then emitted into the blockchain where they can send, spend, or sell it. And by doing so, they'll actually receive a yield on those coins forever. It's in perpetuity. So just by basically bringing capital into the system and then offloading it, whether you buy goods and services or send it to someone or actually just sell it, you actually receive a yield on that capital forever, on that value forever. As the coins float through the system and transact, then a share of the transaction fees gets brought back. So the yield is actually based on true economic activity as opposed to a debt-based system and the fractional banking system, the fiat currency. So the second yield is a holding yield. So for investors who wish to just park their money passively, then we also offer what we call a holding yield. And that's just for keeping your Kinesis currency in the system, just like a bank deposit. The thing is, our modeling of the yield system is much more attractive than bank deposits. So, I mean, our base case forecasts are for a passive return per annum of about 8.5%. And it can go up much further than that depending on the utilization of the currency. So we can't give you like a set yield figure. It depends on the actual, I guess, the success of the currency and how many transactions go through. But this thing is set up for massive adoption, and we already have it through the integrations that we've done. I'll go into some of those deals a little bit later. The third yield, we call it a depositor's yield. So the parties who cannot, you know, participate in the wholesale market, then they can get the same sort of benefits just by their initial deposit into like their e-wallet through our system. And the third yield is a recruitment yield. And this is what I find very, very interesting as well. And this increases, I guess, the viral nature of our system by whether you be a mum or dad wishing to make an extra $100 per week, etc., or whether you be a multi-level, a network marketing company or an affiliate marketing, online affiliate marketing company or something like that. Or a broker dealer who wishes to bring their customers into the system, or a business wishing to pay their employees, etc. This becomes very interesting. For the recruiters of e-wallets, they receive a share of the transaction fees of the e-wallets that they recruit, like forever. So you'll share in the transaction fees of every e-wallet you recruit. That helps enable it to, spread virally quite quickly as well. And everyone's incentivized here. Whatever market participant you look at, everyone's incentivized. And because we're talking about money as well, money touches everyone. Obviously, there's only a very small proportion of the world who actually truly appreciate and have an affinity towards gold. So what we've done here is take gold, that's the greatest store of value, the greatest form of money in the world, and wrap it into basically new world innovative technology and make it money that's highly efficient and also highly rewarding. We've put together a solution. It's a monetary system.
This is really, I think, the breakthrough people sometimes have difficulty wrapping their minds around. Gold, of course, several thousand years of monetary experience and renowned worldwide as the store of value. But then there is this new protocol, and the protocol is the blockchain. And the blockchain actually allows for incredible transparency, virtually instantaneous transactions, the Swiss Army knife currency. You know, we have these dollars that make great reserve currency. Bitcoin is a crypto reserve currency. You combine the sound money qualities of the precious metals along with the blockchain. We covered several interesting bases before the discussion today. First of all, thank you so much, Thomas, for that overview of what's going on. But there's so much here that I want the listeners to sink their teeth into. For instance, the new Kinesis blueprint, or what some people refer to as the white paper. It gives a great overview of your bank, your Visa card, the mobile fiat wallet fees, and that's just one little piece of this puzzle. Can we tell people how they can get a copy?
Yes, certainly. You can put a link up on the webpage, up on our webpage. It's live. So it's at the website is kinesis.money. That's our web link.
Very good. And Andrew McGuire, I understand that Tocqueville showing a lot of interest.
Do you know, Chris, I can only use the word tectonic. We have had so much interest, institutional interest, and I think this is one of the key elements here. This is such a well commercialized currency. It's been thought through absolutely brilliantly. Now, for example, and that's just one example, but we've had so many of the very largest of these institutionals coming and approaching us and saying, look, hang on a minute, you're saying to me, and I think this is one thing that has to be absolutely clear, that every single coin that is emitted into the system is 100% backed by either gold or silver. There is no paper gold or silver involved in this. It is 100% allocated. So if somebody buys a currency, they know that it's actually physical. Now, for example, if you're an institution and you have 5 tons of gold or 3 tons of gold, whatever it is, sitting in a vault, in an independent vault, you can now emit that into the system. You still own that gold. It hasn't gone anywhere. Those bars, those numbered bars, are still in your name. Now, you have a choice. Do I want to yield or don't I want to yield? Well, obviously, it makes sense to emit that into the system because there's no risk to that. Now, I'll just say one other thing, Chris. Your reach is phenomenal. I can't believe we did one interview. I think was it a couple of weeks ago? It seems like a day ago, but a couple of weeks ago. But your reach reached all the way into the UK here. I was approached by one of the largest. I won't say their name right now because we're going to do something with them, and I want to let them have the thunder on this. But we were approached by the finance editor of one of the largest Sunday papers. What they see here is, hang on a minute, you mean to say, and this is people, they're about to, you'd imagine somebody's going to open their Sunday paper. They don't care about gold. They don't know about gold. They have nothing to do with gold. But suddenly they see, hang on a minute, I can get maybe an 8% return on a tier one asset. And it's ethical because every ounce is LBMA approved. It's not blood gold. It's come through the system. It's KYC'd and every single aspect. So you've got three elements there. You've got a yield that you can't get anywhere else. You've got a tier one asset as for the Bank of International Settlements, and you've got it ethical. This is going to go viral. And I think that's just, and your reach to even get that far. And we haven't even publicized this yet. So Chris, but I just want people to understand. This is physical. It's not paper. It is allocated. So anyone who has a concern about that, it is absolutely going to be addressed.
I'd just add to that as well and say, basically, ABX, the management of ABX has obviously been building this out now for quite some time. We've been building it out very quietly. And in fact, we set ABX up as a wholesale exchange, which is now really coming along nicely as far as becoming the leading physical precious metals exchange of the world with the integrations that we're doing into the likes of Deutsche Börse and postal systems, et cetera, et cetera. We've always had the vision of finally, basically, the evolution of blockchain and cryptocurrency technology. We've been able to do it. The ABX team we've really studied money and monetary history closely, and we understand all the nuances of building out a marketplace And it's very specialized to build out a marketplace to bring it all together and make it liquid and make it active and bring the participants into the marketplace and have the confidence in the marketplace. And all this metal that will be stored through ABX's quality assured vaulting network with an unblemished track record operating since 2013. So it's not like you have to trust a new entity. You're trusting, you don't need to trust anyone because we have a multi-layered audit and verification system that's all transparent and published, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one fantastic thing about this. It's an established team and group of partners have combined and unified their efforts to bring this into reality, this vision. But one big thing that I'd say that we've really tried to combat is this notion, this phenomenon, Gresham's law of money. Now, for example, if Kinesis just offered a holding yield, then firstly, the yield wouldn't be so great because the money would just be hoarded into the system. It's not incentivized to be utilized as a currency. So that's why we've come up with this highly unique yield system that stimulates money velocity. So it promotes people to actually use it as a currency. Buy the gold, bring the coins to life. You're effectively being your own central bank by bringing these coins to life. Then actually you receive a benefit forever by spending them. Say, for example, someone spends or sends or sells $10,000 of gold per month. And if they're selling, then they can just revolve it around. If it's just $10,000 and it's not compounding, that's $120,000 per month that they're getting out into the system. I mean, per year that they're getting out into the system, and that's working for them for really nothing. And they can just keep on doing that, revolving their capital, bringing more and more into the system. You're just letting it loose, letting it go out into the system and work for you. So you're active initially, and then it becomes a passive yield. By just simply utilizing the currency, you share in the economic activity of the system forever. And obviously, if you're doing that, then you're incentivized to bring others into the system to utilize it as a currency as well. And this is the whole viral aspect of it. This is why we think that this has the ability to lead a revolution from the small person up, facilitates a person-centric revolution here.
I'd like to give people who are just, again, coming up to speed here with this project an idea of the advances you've already made in the area. For instance, the Indonesian Post Office Partnership announcement in our last discussion. But you've also been working on the Kinesis Velocity Token. And this is interesting because you have an upcoming ICO and then the blockchain, the Stellar aspect. But also I'd like to know more about this Deutsche Börse Group Clearinghouse. I understand that you have a partnership announced there, and that is expected to be integrated by Q3 2018.
Yeah, correct. What we've done with the Deutsche Börse Group, so it's a big exchange group, one of the largest exchange groups in the world. They will be clearing the trades of ABX. So it's a different model to, say, the blockchain in a sense. It's called central clearing, where they operate the clearinghouse, and it's through an entity called European Commodity Clearing. But what that does is integrate us with the largest organizations, trading organizations in the world. So they have like 23 clearing members. I mean, that opposes to the LPMCL handful of clearing members. They have 450 members. So with that integration, we integrate into 450 of their institutional members who can trade in the ABX system, but that's all integrated into the Kinesis system. So the Kinesis system utilizes the ABX technology to create this currency. It's a very unique system where we've got a wholesale market, and from the wholesale market, you buy these coins and they're instantly emitted into the blockchain. So as soon as you buy, then it's brought into the blockchain, and that's the market for those coins that you bought. But you have to buy them in the wholesale market first. Well, that's if you want to be a minter. You don't have to if you're just the ordinary person wishing to, you know, open an e-wallet in the blockchain and utilize it. This is for the more active sort of participant who wants to actually create this currency and earn revenue off the back of it, earn a yield. Yeah, and the other recent deal that we'll do, and we'll do a press release around, is with a mobile bank. Well, I'm not in a position to announce it at the moment. They're a publicly traded company. We'll announce that in short order, but they're very large, and we'll be building, like, we integrate into their millions of clients as well. So our currency will just be sitting within their mobile banking system. Anyone can just set up an account seamlessly and invest in Kinesis. So we've got all these integrations, all these institutional integrations, which are very, very exciting, but we've focused on building out the value proposition for everyone, whether it be mum and pa on the street, whether it be a vaulting provider, and we're working now with a couple of very significant vaulting facilities to bring online literally all their gold and silver holdings. Because they're offering a service to their clients. It's a fee-paying, fee-charging service. They can take a solution to them, say, okay, well, with the gold that you have or the silver that you have in our vaulting system, you can actually earn a yield on it. And of course, none of their clients are saying no to that. Why would you say no? There's so many different strategic ways that we're just sucking in metal holdings and bringing online metal holdings all around the world. It's billions of dollars worth. And it's very, very exciting times, really. The other thing I find hugely exciting is, what is a company, how is a company valued? A company is valued to the extent of its, like, revenue-producing capabilities. And you can look at, you know, future cash flows, and you can assign a value to a company based on its revenue-producing capabilities. If a company doesn't have revenue capabilities, then it has no value. In the case of gold, it didn't have revenue-producing capabilities until now. But gold was valued as a currency, and because it has scarcity that's controlled by the universe, then that's where its value came from. But in this case, we're actually attaching a yield and revenue-producing capabilities to gold, and for the first time in doing that, and there's a very good chance that we could see a very significant revaluation to gold because of this, because that revenue-producing capability actually has value attached to it. The consequences of that are very interesting.
No, exactly. I mean, for folks that are maybe new to the gold thesis, the Kinesis Crypto Bank and all of the programs here might accelerate a return to a more sound monetary standard by increasing transparency vis-a-vis the blockchain and their operation. Andrew McGuire, any other comments?
Well, I think you just touched on something very, very important here. I think for those people that do understand the gold market, and obviously you have a lot of listeners who are very, very savvy, what do you think this is going to do to the gold price? I mean, we're talking about what has been a paper-centric price that's been established through the non-delivery markets such as the COMEX, where really 99.9% of all transactions are settled by cash and never take delivery. We're talking about the LBMA system, over-the-counter system, which is a $5 trillion a year market. Now, that doesn't even account for derivatives, which is basically leveraged at 100 to 1, and we have absolute provenance for that, and we've provided those details to you before, and that can be, if people want to go to Gata and research the sort of leverage that's involved, we're looking at least 100 to 1. And if you start to add in the exchange for physical flows that are flowing out in the hundreds of tons a week, that are being shoved into forwards and not delivered, it could be 1,000 to 1. We don't know, but it's significant. So in this case, this solution is, we're going to see the paper market in the rearview mirror of Kinesis. It is going to be tectonic. Every single ounce that flows through has to be physically purchased and physically vaulted. This is phenomenal. You cannot buy paper to settle these positions. So what's that going to do to a market that's so highly leveraged?
And it's ironic, Andrew and Thomas, because here we sit on the cusp of tectonic shifts. The magma is stirring, and I think the volcanism is certainly indicating that we could see an eruption in the precious metals market, and just from a technical, let alone fundamental perspective. So your timing might be just right here today. Thomas, any closing comments?
Yes, I didn't answer one of your questions before, Chris, just around these Velocity tokens that we're just opening up and currently in pre-sale for. We're offering 25% discount to these. These velocity tokens, they offer the ability initially to be part of the pre-ICO benefits, our bullion-backed currency suite, once it's released, with the forecasted launch date for those being the 1st of May. To access the pre-ICO benefits, which include a greater sharing in the fees for the coin purchases, you need to buy at least one of these. And basically that raises, the velocity token raises capital for the business so we can take it forward. In addition, all velocity token holders receive 20% of the transaction fees and a few other revenue lines generated by the monetary system. We really encourage all of your listeners, your audience, take a look at this. Years and years of work has gone into this, and we really see this as a monetary system that can make a change. Potentially it can be, you know, the true future of successful and sustainable money. Please look us up. Please look up our website and our blueprint, as we call it. The white paper just became, it's too big at this point, effectively. It's not digestible, so we put it more so into a more digestible presentation form. Please take the time to have a look. I'm sure you'll find how profound this opportunity really is.
Yeah, the Kinesis Blueprint, of course, I have it right here on the desktop. This is for everyone to sink their teeth into, take a look at, kick the tires, if you will. I do have to make a quick disclaimer here. In the United States, we have to be very cautious with ICOs, and that, of course, does not reflect in any way on Kinesis. In the U.S., regulations have recently changed, according to the SEC. This may restrict some people, of course, so you'll want to look into that further. But outside the U.S. borders, there are very few restrictions. Andrew McGuire, final comments, please.
Just that, Chris, thank you very much. I think this is the most exciting event, as you say, to hit the monetary system. This is the most exciting event for gold and silver. We'll be looking back after this, I think after next week, when we really see this take off. And the tokens, I believe, Tom, are even going to go on the blockchain next week. This changes history.
I do want to encourage all of our listeners today, subscribers and readers, to certainly pick up a copy of this Kinesis Blueprint version 10. Most likely have the PDF file, of course, linkable on all of the GoldSeek web pages. This is a document definitely worth reading and sharing.
Please contact us either via our website. We'll have like a contact form there, or you'll find our email addresses there as well. As I said, download the blueprint document, have a look over our website. If you want to know any information about ABX, visit our website at abx.com. Plenty of information on there about what we do. We have our press releases out there with our major deals and everything like that. Yeah, please look us up.
And the application forms for the Velocity Token are on the website.
All right. Keep us updated on all your progress with Kinesis.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
So glad to have you back with us today. It's a real pleasure to welcome Lior Gontz. This is his debut appearance of Wealth Research Group. Lior is a sound money enthusiast, which is music to the ears of so many of our listeners today, and he's a big fan of silver. It's an underloved asset class that's primed. Welcome, Lior.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Very interesting discussion before the show. I think many of our listeners can probably appreciate some of the struggles you had early on overcoming challenges and hurdles. And now you've reached a point where you have become self-actualized and have some knowledge to share to actually help other investors. Why don't you just let people know what you'd like for them to know about you as we introduce you and your ideas to the audience?
Well, sure. I'm 33 now, started investing when I was 16, basically forced to think about money for the first time at the age of 13. Didn't think about too much before then, but I had to kind of figure out stuff on my own because I had desires and goals and saw everyone around me, enjoying life. So I started thinking about how can I get some of that money, right? So I started coaching basketball, assistant coaching, right? I was 13. Babysitting, painting decks, at the age of 16, started delivering pizzas and anything else, and saved up. Obviously, because living at home, I could save up a little more. Got my parents to sign a waiver and deposited all the savings I had into the stock market right around July 2000. So the market tanked real bad just months before I went in. I did a lot of research with my grandfather and got into China real early. Without even knowing it, I was a commodities bull at the age of 16. And it was a very, very good time to get involved with China. It was cheap. It was under the radar. That's how I got started investing. Actually, my first stock is called VF Corp. Still holding it today, like 18 years later. Because I was the first book I read about investing was Warren Buffett's book. That's what my grandfather gave me. And in it, obviously, as you know, if the business is sound and solid, the holding time, the best holding time to avoid taxes and to keep compounding your dividends is forever. So VF Corp is, as you know, is the owner of the North Face, Timberland, Lee Jeans, Wrangler Jeans, all these good clothing brands. And I was I was a teenager. So that's how I started. I researched like what I was wearing, who's making it, found out it was this company. Anyways, the stock is expensive right now. I'm not suggesting it or anything, but just telling you that's how I got started. In 2009, after many businesses that I started between then and between 2000 and 2009, I jumped on a plane to Phoenix, Arizona, and at the height of the real estate jam, I started a business in real estate. I thought it was the contrarian thing to do. It grew to five cities, and I sold it in 2013, and then started a little boutique fund for high net worth individuals, liquidated it for quite a nice profit in 2015, and shifted my focus entirely from speaking to 20 high net worth individuals every day. Instead of doing all that research for them, I said, what about doing all this research that I love doing anyways on a broad scale in a free newsletter with no threshold? I don't need to know how much you're making, and just share what I love to share. And that's how Wealth Research Group came to be. In January of 2016, we luckily cut the bottom for the gold shares, and in 2016 had a major, major year for the newsletter, recommending 12 mining companies that gained. And then 2017, we shifted our focus to cryptocurrencies mostly. Got into Ethereum at $12, which was big, right? Dash at $30, Monero at $19. So we had big, big winners. Bitcoin at $400. Personally, I first learned about Bitcoin at 19, as I told you off the air, but different story. And that's it. That's where we're at today. That's where I am personally. I'm a full-time investor who loves to travel around the world, travel to at least 10 countries a year with my wife and daughter. And that's it. That's a little bit about me.
So let's talk a bit now about AG, silver. Really boring period for many years in this market, but some of our top guests think that we may still be in the remnants of a bull market that began when you first started looking at commodities after the dot-com implosion. This has just been a rather long bear move, might say, against the upward trend. Do you see better times ahead for the precious metals, and tell us why?
I know a lot of people take the view that in 2000 we started this bull market with commodities and we've just been on this long correction and now we're go out of this correction. But I'm actually much more bullish than that. I think we've just been through a rough, severe bear market for commodities for a few years. It's bottoming out. You know, commodities, for them to rally, and for precious metals in particular, and silver within the precious metals, because it's a quasi industrial metal, for it to rally, there's a few things that need to happen in the economy, and they happened between 2000 and 2008. So between 2000 and 2008, we had a sideways market for the large indices, which is very favorable for commodities. We had interest rates that were about 5 to 6%, then lowered. But then between 2004 and 2006, we saw a hiking period, so a tightening period, which is very good for commodities. And then we saw an actual demographic growth in the economy. So all three of these things are very important. With regards to demographics, we've been through in the Western world for the past 10 years, not been the right demographics for a growth move. So between 2008 and 2016, we did not have growing demographics in the U.S. for peak earners. In other words, the peak earners were smaller in demographic size than the generation that's younger, the 19 to 34-year-olds who are just getting into the business world. And so most people in America, you know, they had their cars, they had their houses, they had their jobs, and, you know, they had their phones, etc. No growth. And you cannot stimulate, whatever you do, you cannot stimulate the, you know, the average person to buy another car if he doesn't need one. But now, since last year, the peak earners, the 34 to 49-year-olds, have surpassed in demographic size all the other groups. And so there's going to be real growth in America for the next few years in terms of demographics. And couple that with the fact that you've already been through a 10-year bull market with stocks. Well, not 10, but 9-year bull market with stocks. So you're going to see the stocks topping off in the next few months to a year and a half. And so you're going to see either a bear market or a sideways market. So again, we're getting back to all the stuff that helps a commodity super cycle begin. Got the right demographics. You got a sideways market for the stock market, or a bear market, even better, for commodities, obviously. And then the third thing is the Fed is hiking rates, and they're hiking rates because inflation is starting to pick up, and it's starting to pick up because there's a wage increase in America, because there's a shortage of jobs. So for many years, a lot of deflationaries have said, look, all of these baby boomers are going to retire. That's going to create deflation. I was on the flip side saying, look, if any and every analyst on the planet is saying it's deflationary, it's not. It's inflationary. And the reason it's inflationary is because when these people get out of the jobs market, they create a shortage of jobs. And employers have to pay more for people to enter the workforce and become skilled laborers for their companies. And that's exactly what's going on right now. In America, there's probably 8 to 10 million jobs shortage right now. So you're going to see wages growing even further. And now with the tax cuts and the infrastructure plan, there's going to be even more overheating for the economy. Overheated economies are inflationary. Stocks underperform in these environments. Commodities overperform in these environments, and that's what I think we'll start to see in the next few months here as the market finally tops off. I think it's a function of having the treasury yields rise even further and the Fed's fund rate rise even further. Once it does that, I believe that silver could be one of the best commodities to own as a trade. When we talk about silver as a hedge for any chaos or any catastrophe, I just make sure that I have about 1 year to 18 months worth of living expenses always in physical form of silver, and another 1 year to a year and a half of gold in physical form as well. So that's pretty constant for me for the past few years. And obviously, I love bear markets for these two commodities in terms of buying and storing them. But on the flip side, as an investor, I love for them to go up, because that's when I can position with undervalued and under the radar mining companies and trade them. So I do both. And that's kind of where I'm at with silver. Silver is very, very interesting. A very good friend of mine. In fact, one of the people that I have most of my, investment in the silver world with is Mr. Keith Neumeyer, basically called Mr. Silver. When I speak with him, he is incredibly bullish on silver, has a price target that's over, three digits. It's around $115 per ounce. He runs the purest mining company in the world, Silver Majestic, as well as two other, projects in the precious metals arena. So this guy knows the ins and outs of silver and the supply chain. And I can tell you, it's a very tiny market. As you know, it can really easily trade for a large premium, as we saw in 2011, when it traded for about 3 to 3.5 times the production price. So I'm incredibly bullish about silver. And I think the price of it fluctuating at where it's at right now, it has very little downside and lots of upside. It's a very good risk-reward ratio.
No, there's just so much that's right with silver. And we know Keith Neumeyer quite well. He's friend of the show. And you are right. Talk about King Silver, the under-loved asset. And let's talk about, though, the importance of gold to the silver price. I can't really think of one bull market throughout history where silver took off without this correlation to gold. It's absolutely essential that we see some long-term strength in the yellow metal. And we've seen it start to come back to life, show some signs here lately.
With regards to silver, I think it can rise to about what it was in 2011 if we see another inflationary environment. So give or take $40 to $50 for silver. And at a 50-to-1 ratio to gold, that means gold is trading at about $2,000 per ounce. So that's on the low end for both of these metals. If we see a lot of, I can tell you this, once the market tops, that's the best time to start positioning with trades. When the U.S. equities market top off, I believe that it will be the best time to position with trades. What could happen is that once the next big correction comes in the large U.S. equities, and I believe we're going to experience three or four more of these January-type 10% corrections before this finally tops off. So we're going to see huge corrections, then bull runs. Huge corrections, bull runs for the next year.
Between 2006 through 2008, we had a topping process. We didn't see what everyone was expecting, the 1987-1929 style meltdown, a 20-25% correction over a period of days. No, we saw a gradual topping process, which is fortuitous for investors because it actually gives you an opportunity to start positioning your portfolio for the change in volatility that we're preparing to see.
Yeah, so basically right now we're at this stage where Wealth Research Group likes to call it the blow-off top stage. And we wrote about this in a special report that we created for this show called wealthresearchgroup.com/portfolio. And that's my personal portfolio allocation for 2018 and how I see 2018 and how I plan to position myself. You can go to wealthresearchgroup.com/portfolio and download exactly my own plan for 2018. And going back into that, what we're going through right now is a period where the Fed keeps hiking the rates because of inflationary expectations. That creates a situation where a lot of pension funds and any other fund that is looking to generate fixed income, they're not going to chase dividend anymore. They're going to chase yields. And so every time you're going to see a correction, you're going to see money exit the markets and never come back during this cycle. You're going to see it moving to bonds. And so every time you're going to see a slimmer market, slimmer markets are more volatile, and still there's going to be a push forward until the yields are juicy enough that nobody would pay the expensive multiples for the U.S. equities that they're willing to pay right now because they love the dividend yield as well. This gradual move from being involved with the large indices for the dividend yield to moving them into corporate bonds and treasury bonds, that's what we're going to see. Now, every time that happens, investors need to hedge during these corrections. So you might see them not only moving into treasuries, but also moving into commodities as a hedge. So you might see the commodities starting to rally even before the market really tops off. They're anticipating the ultimate top and starting to position earlier.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Bitcoin, cryptos, the altcoin space. So you were in early 19 and then again at 400. I think most of our listeners can relate to that. I was mining for Bitcoin when it was pennies and dimes and wish I'd held on to those. Fast forward to today, we're a long way off from $400, Lior. I mean, we're talking 20, 30-fold from those levels. We had a blow-off peak at 20 to 26,000, depending on the nation you call home. Steep correction, 70% down to 6,000, and a subsequent bounce from there. I can make a case, and I'm sure you probably can too, for much higher prices and much lower prices. We have pension funds and other endowment funds just starting to test the waters here. It's very difficult for the big funds to access these markets for many reasons. There's legal issues. There are custodial problems. For folks to jump over those hurdles requires significant changes and advances, which are starting to play out. But we're not quite there yet. Give us your thoughts on the space. Do you also expect $5 and $10 trillion market cap for the overall altcoin and Bitcoin arena?
Well, I don't think we're even close to a peak, to be honest with you. I want to talk more about what you're saying with regards to institutional investors, because that's very true. Institutional investors, there are about $30 trillion worth of managed money in the world, and, you know, give or take 1% of that will look to get into cryptocurrencies or the blockchain sector. You got to remember that what created this market, this $500 billion market for cryptocurrencies, is only about $50 billion worth of investment. The rest of this market cap is due to mining. So when these transactions occur, you mint new coins. Once you mint new coins, the market cap of the entire sector balloons. But only $50 billion have ever been invested in cryptocurrencies, and that has created a $500 billion economy. And so if 1% of managed money comes in at $300 billion, that's around a $3 trillion economy for the cryptocurrencies. I do see that happening, but I don't like the word cryptocurrencies.
Lior, you make a great point here. I haven't done enough to make it clear for our listeners, many of whom are really savvy in this area, that Bitcoin, it's a store of value. As you know, there's maybe 10 to 15 million left, if we're lucky, due to many reasons. They've been lost, hard drives lost, dust on exchanges, and then dormant accounts. But we need to differentiate, and it needs to be more clear, that we have a currency space, which involves, let's just say, maybe Ethereum, which I really consider more of a contract platform. But you have Ethereum, you have your Bitcoin, you have your Litecoin, and then maybe this Lightning Network that's coming might just solve some big hurdles, which actually I think might just be the impetus that helps Bitcoin jump to the next level, you know, somewhere between 35 and 50,000. A lot of these coins that we're interested in today, the Salts out there, the EOS, and other platforms, they're not at all about currency. We're talking about a whole new environment, a global, it's a whole new stock market, I guess, for our people over 50.
Exactly. So I don't think about them as cryptocurrency. They're encrypted startup companies in the tech sector that aim to solve real-world problems. So, you know, you got to think of them as you would with any other startup. Most of them are not competitive. They are run by mediocre management teams with little experience in marketing and how to build a company. They might be good programmers, but that's not enough. And that's why this sector, probably 90% of it, will not be there in a few years.
I mean, this is just an episode, is it not, out of Silicon Valley? You know, the hit HBO show. There's a dichotomy. There's a bifurcation between the early adopters, the entrepreneurs, and the coders, developers, founders, and programmers. And then you have, on the other extreme, the need for sound, real-world, tangible management. We've seen it time and time again. There are real-world examples. Take a look at Apple, right? I think it's the classic example where the founder, Steve Jobs, essentially get run out of his own company by the corporate button-down type, only to fail and have to bring the founder, the developer, right back in again. And this is, in some ways, a dot-com-like event. There were just a few left standing, and some of those are recognized names today. Okay, we have Amazon. I guess you could say Yahoo, along with Google. But the key point is, you have a portfolio of 20 of these cryptos, and one of them is the next Amazon. Isn't that going to be the key to success? Go ahead, Lior.
Alluding to what you're saying with regards to, you know, the exchanges and the mountains of support tickets that are submitted every day that they don't reach a month later, shutdowns, threats of banning, lots of problems in these exchanges. And so this $300 billion in estimated money that wants to come in, it won't go to the exchange. Wall Street fund managers cannot risk their clients' money or pension funds cannot do that with the exchanges. What they will look for is traditional, regulated, you know, stocks in the blockchain sector, companies that are finding ways to monetize the blockchain sector. And this is huge because, you know, every day $5.4 trillion worth of transactions are occurring on the World Wide Web. But no one is cutting a coupon on that because there is no owner to the World Wide Web. But with blockchain, completely different environment. In other words, if companies find ways to create a blockchain for insurance companies, for all the data to be on a blockchain, and then they say, okay, well, we want 1% of your gross revenue for creating this supply chain for you, that's a cash flowing monster of a company for blockchain technology. If another company needs that in supply management of their food, a food company, and there's, you know, countless of them, fleet management for companies that manage thousands and thousands of cars, this is endless. So companies that find ways to monetize blockchain, that will be places that institutional investors would love to come in. Also, companies that build large mining facilities and mine, you know, the major coins like Bitcoin, like Ethereum, etc., and do that economically and profitably will also attract investors' money because it's much safer to invest in a company, in a regulated company, than in a cryptocurrency where it's hard to know who the developer is and it's an open source community. It's very hard for investors and for me personally to put the large sums of money with where there's no management. I don't know who's the lead, who's the head. I love centralized companies.
You like to be able to quantify your risk is really what you're saying. But I think we also need to address the security concerns. It's important for people to wrap their minds around the idea that the CFTC has publicly and very clearly stated, we are talking about a laissez-faire, hands-off approach here. We don't want to have undue regulations, just as we allowed the internet to have a free space and do no harm policy for approximately 20 years. That worked out pretty well for the United States and for the Western world and now around the world. Okay, now unfortunately with net neutrality, legislation's coming in and causing some disruption. Nevertheless, I think this is a positive sign that at least our officials, some of whom recognize that we've got to allow organic growth in the crypto space and cut out this nonsense about only bad actors turning to cryptocurrencies. They tried to pull the same nonsensical routine with email. Early adopters in the internet space in 1994 and 95, they know that this is disruptive to every area. And this is really another topic for another show, but it's going to be incredibly disruptive for government. I think you could make a case the blockchain will be the end of the current regime and usher in an entirely new type of government.
I called it peak intrusiveness. In other words, we've reached the peak of how much government will gain access into our private lives. From now on, we'll have a mechanism with the blockchain that we control how much information we're willing to give any organization, including the government. They've misused and abused the system that they by default created in 1971, and I think it's coming to an end. I mean, you can call them you can call them what you want, the politicians and the bankers, but at the end of the day, they're going to be wiped out by evolution. The world is changing. People are looking for different things than they did 30 and 40 years ago. And the economy needs to be much more global today than it was people need more control over their data. Data is critical today. So blockchain is one of the most important tools going forward for achieving this. And that's why personally I'm positioning with blockchain companies. Specifically, we've done months and months of research. One of the companies that we are very excited about is a company called Hive Blockchain Technologies. It's a hybrid between Genesis Mining, which was the largest hash power mining company in the world, private, and they merged, some of their business merged with Fiore Group, one of the leading merchant banks in Canada, and they formed Hive. Now they have Ethereum mining in Iceland and in Sweden. They're going to do Bitcoin mining also in Sweden. So these are very cheap electrical. The economy we're getting into is something that I don't think we've experienced in the last 35 years. Since 1982, we've seen a lot of deflation in the economy. And obviously a lot of people will say, the dollar purchasing power has lost about 40 to 50% in the last 35 years. That's true. Fiat currencies, they lose purchasing power year over year. You know, differentiate that from inflation. General inflation is a general rise in price for all things. Sure, healthcare, education, entertainment, those things have gone up in price. Many things have gone down in price. Many technologies have gone down. Many products have gone down in price. So what I think we're entering into is an inflationary environment, which we've never seen since the 70s.
I'm really kind of surprised that the mainline media and others have not spent more time on this amazing real-time, you know, we're talking about a bolivar that's 236,000 to the dollar. Okay, to the USD. In just such a brief period of time, 99.99% of the value just wiped out. This is a remarkable nation. They have a tremendous history, a rich, robust nation. I know it would be far more difficult with our bond market to sort of shield us from the ravages of typical inflation. Are you looking for the type of numbers that could crush the middle class, or are you looking for something different?
I think the type of inflation that we're going to experience in the U.S., perhaps even in Europe, and in the younger demographics of Asia, is not the type of inflation where it's double digits, but it's going to be like 4 to 5% over a decade. And when you factor in 4 to 5% over a decade, that's a large problem.
What I think makes it worse, Lior, we're in a situation where the middle class is already struggling. They're already underwater. If you look at the numbers, somewhere between, I think it's 60, 70% of the U.S. can't even come up with $500 for an emergency expense, for an auto repair. We're dealing with an already stressed to the extreme of the spectrum. You know, something is going to break, and now we have a guest come on the show and tell us it's going to get much, much more challenging.
With regards to how to prepare and what to do, I think the U.S. as a nation has a superiority in many industries, and people should look how they can get involved in industries that the U.S. can excel at and industries that are not easily outsourceable. So any trade that you can get into that it's not outsourceable will be very, very important as an occupation, especially with the amount of retirees that they are. Anything that has to do with healthcare is going to be big, but also obviously if you can become part of the high-tech world, the U.S. is still going to be very much a leader in that. That's your main income. And that's always going to be the most important thing in your life, how you do your career. And then your investable income, which is a secondary part of your life. Obviously, that's not going to be the major part of your life unless you're already, very wealthy. With that, I think this is going to be a golden period for the junior mining sector. It's been decimated for a number of years. I think people like Keith Neumeyer, and people like Amir Adnani, if you're familiar with them, for example, are people that are going to lead companies that will rise by 500, 600, and 700% in the coming years. Personally, I've committed large funds into two of their companies, with Amir Adnani Gold Mining Inc. is one of the premier companies.
Amir Adnani is a name you can really trust and was a supporter, and Keith Neumeyer. I mean, these are top names. Why don't we wrap up today and you tell people more about the services you provide at Wealth Research Group?
We run the newsletter. That's my pride and joy. I do it as a labor of love. The newsletter is geared towards people that want to strengthen their financial fortress. My way of sharing the research that I do personally and put in my own thoughts and opinions in there. And what we do is we go on these marathons of 30 to 40 to 50 days where we dissect companies, specific companies in the mining sector, in the cannabis sector, and in the blockchain sector. And if we find something that's very, very attractive, then we actually profile and cover the company in the newsletter, and we've been very, very successful thus far. With regards to the subscribers, the idea is to always keep it, lots of offers to change that, but we've been able to keep monetizing it the way we like it. We don't plan to change that in the future.
We're going to have you back on the show because there's so many topics that we need to discuss.
Thanks for having me.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. I began discussing the growing practice and developing threat of digital censorship during and after the 2016 presidential election. Growing instances of demonetization for content providers and the occasional termination of YouTube and Twitter channels were par for the course. As many of you who listen to this broadcast and follow other alternative or direct media are aware, ever since the most recent Florida school shooting, many prominent YouTube and some Twitter channels have simply been terminated. Full stop. End of story. In a discussion prior to the 2016 presidential election, Matt Drudge commented that it was ill-advised to build one's brand, identity, and message on platforms that didn't belong to you, which could, and likely would, ultimately be yanked from under you without a moment's notice and with very little recourse. That day has clearly come. The stakes of the information war that pits truth against propaganda and censorship have rapidly reached a new level. There are going to be casualties as this battle progresses. Decentralized peer-to-peer direct communication tips the balance of power in favor of liberty. And anything else tips the balance of power away from liberty. More independent voices will be silenced, I hope only temporarily, as we move toward the all-important 2018 midterm elections. If Trump gains support in both houses of Congress, the agenda items he has wanted to advance or has been waiting to advance will become legislation in the second half of his first term. If he loses support, an attempt will be made to impeach him, and everyone who voted for him or has supported him since the November election of 2016. The war against alternative media is going to grow more fierce. Decentralized peer-to-peer direct communication is the greatest threat to every swamp creature that dwells in Washington. The time to support those in the alternative media is now. And that means if viewers and listeners have to navigate their browsers to multiple websites and platforms to see, read, and listen to multiple thought leaders, then that is what you must do. Because outright censorship and termination of free speech, especially speech that you don't agree with, or isn't politically correct, or makes you uncomfortable, that is the very speech you must defend. The only safe space you are entitled to is the one you create by changing the channel or ignoring what you believe to be irrelevant viewpoints. Some voices will disappear temporarily, some permanently, and new ones will emerge. Build change into how you seek out and absorb the myriad of direct, independent content creators that will continue to shape the future of the world. Some may have lost the battle these past few weeks, but I remain confident that in the end, independent thought and leadership will ultimately redefine and win the media war. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.